Blog Talk Radio.
Brought to you by Satanic International Network. You're listening to the Ooze.
Upon the cage, every foul wicked spirit is the host, the Ooze.
20 minutes, Dead or Alive, on the Ooze, right now.
On the Ooze, it's gonna fucking rock. Be there.
The whole point.
To really tap into have a serial crime
necessitates a certain fortitude.
Now onto our show.
Thanks for tuning in. I'm TC Downey, aka Destino, and with me on the air is my co-host Dark Fool. Dark Fool, how you doing?
I'm doing good, man. I'm doing good. Just trying to get everything all set up, and pretty exciting show. Sorry, I got some lag going on in the background there. Fix it. Technical difficulties this morning, but other than that, everything is good. Hello?
Hello. The Skype decided to kick out on me, and it looks like I lost Matt in the process, too. If everybody hangs on, we'll get this all back together. I've called in on my cell phone. Okay, Matt, there you are.
Hey, all right. That was weird.
The Skype kicked me off the... off the Ooze switchboard, so I had to call back into my phone.
Today, huh?
Yeah. Well, yesterday I had the same kind of technical difficulties, just because I'm doing it from my job rather than doing it from home. Where at home, my internet connection's much faster, so it's easy to run Skype off of it. Today, apparently, the P1 here at work is being bogged down. I suppose there's somebody around here sucking down the bandwidth or something.
All right. Well, I'm outside. I've got everything all set up. There were technical difficulties with my cell phone, too, earlier on the show. But to answer your question, other than that, I'm fine.
Awesome. I got to kind of laugh because as I was listening to the new intro come in, it's really kind of humorous me because there's that long pause as it's kind of winding down and then it says, and now on to the show.
Yeah.
Almost every single time that happens, and Jason Sorrell is the co-host, he starts talking before it actually goes into the now on to your show thing, kind of screws him up, so... I was just kind of getting a chuckle out of it and thinking to myself that I ought to make it a longer pause, you know.
A longer pause, yeah, just like the long pause before a beep on an answering machine. It's like...
Yeah, exactly.
Beep.
Precisely. So anyway, today... Today you actually had something that you wanted to talk about, and for once I'm admittedly not very well studied in this particular category, so I figured I'd let you introduce it and kind of break down what it is and what you want to examine about it today, and we can kind of go from there.
Okay, well, first of all, I'm glad this is a discussion edition because I have studied this, but I have not experienced this, and there's a big difference. The topic of the day, which, by the way, I got to correct your terminology just a tad. It's the Black Brothers, not the Black Brotherhood, but, you know, that's not so much of a big deal. The big deal is what they represent, you know, what the Black Brothers are. That's really what I want to get down to the core of. And this is within the Thelemic Crowleyan system, Crowleyan Kabbalistic system. And this has to do with the concept of crossing the abyss, going from the phenomenal world into the nominal, basically going into that gap where basically language can't take, you know, where words cannot describe, basically enlightenment. Words can't describe anymore the experience getting onto the higher plane, the last, shall we say, pyramid or city of the pyramid, as Crowley puts it, which is actually the last three Sephiras, Bina, Hakma, and Kether. So, but what the Black Brothers represent, from what I have gathered, are people or mages or magicians who, once they reach this state, there is a crucial step in which you have to let go of the ego. And if you do not let go of the ego, you're considered a Black Brother. Now, that is very interesting because in it, that kind of makes a reference to the left-hand path. You know, you have people that are all about ego and ego fulfillment and self-deification rather than dissolving the ego and into the Godhead. So,
right. Now, is this reference specifically in dissolving the ego or in dissolving the false ego? Because I can see that being kind of a tricky thing to understand if it's not really described accurately.
Exactly. And that's why I want this to be a discussion edition. I believe that it's personally the it's actually the false. So you can take that any which way. It could be a false ego or it could be the actual ego. That I'm not quite clear on. You know, but what the Black Brothers are, from what I have gathered, are people that have not been able to let go and that hold on to themselves and hold on to their egos and just eventually, as Crowley puts it, gets dissolved, which I don't necessarily believe 100%. I believe that a good, healthy ego, a strong ego, is actually beneficial. So that's one of the things
sure,
that I would like to discuss.
Sure, that's actually why I asked about whether it's dissolving the false ego or just the ego in general. I think if it speaks in reference or in relation to the left-hand path, it would be more of a dissolvement of false ego. If it speaks directly from a right-hand path perspective, then it would be the annihilation of ego as a whole, you know, the submission of self to whatever greater entities you think you serve.
Exactly. And see, you have the book, Lords of the Left-Hand Path. It's pretty clear that Crowley was neither right-hand path nor left-hand path. I mean, he didn't categorize himself in that, which is what makes this very interesting, is this, you know, dissolving of the ego? Is this the dissolving of the false ego? If so, then what exactly are the Black Brothers? You know, are they left-hand path? Are they something else? You know? And there's much more speculation, too. But anyways, go on.
That's what I'm trying to figure out. What merits are there to the speculation of them being one or the other?
Exactly. I've done a little bit of research, as you know. You know, I've always come prepared to the show, and I went on a few forums, as well as looked up some of Crowley's writing on the topic. And there's something interesting here that other people have speculated. I'm going to get into this. Something Aleister Crowley wrote in Liber Aleph on the Black Brothers. And he wrote...
Okay.
Let's see if I can find it. Let's see. Therefore... is the choice given unto him whether he will destroy his temple and give up his life, extending it to universal life, or whether he will make a fortress about that temple and abide therein in the false sphere of Doth, which is the abyss. Okay. So Doth, as many Kabbalists will know, is the sphere of knowledge, or of knowledge only that can be experienced. So to put up, well, I mean, I've heard it speculated, and this is actually a really interesting speculation, that the Black Brothers are actually atheists in the sense that they just put it in knowledge, like empirical knowledge, what I can test, what I can prove. But, you know, there is a certain amount of knowledge that can only be experienced. You know, it can't exactly be set in those or couched in those terms. So some have speculated the Black Brothers could also be atheists.
Right. Well, I mean, all right, let me, like I said, again, I'm kind of ignorant on this whole thing, so I'm just going to kind of come from my own perspective here on this.
Right.
But
and
ultimately,
just really quickly, as am I, that's why I want to bring this up in the discussion edition to see, you know, how much more I can learn from this if anybody calls in.
Right. Right on. I mean, ultimately, I think that inherently, the left-hand path denies any God outside of themselves, period. So, you know, if this Black Brotherhood is left-hand path, it's by default going to have what I might, I don't know, deem as an atheistic mindset. Not necessarily that they're atheists in total, because, I mean, to deny that there's any, you know, God outside of yourself is not the same thing as denying that there are forces in work outside of yourself that you don't understand nor can categorize. I'm really kind of curious as to, I mean, one of my major downsides on Aleister Crowley is the one, I guess one of the main reasons why I don't really know much about this stuff is he appeals a little too strongly, in my opinion, to the things unknown, and he appeals in such a sense that he's trying to, I don't know, I mean, base what conclusions he's come on from a purely subjective standpoint. He's, you know, trying to re-manifest them in a more of a crystal mindset. I mean, at least that's the way that I read him. I think that's kind of why I agreed with Jason King in his analysis of the Liber AL, you know, and Crowley being able to point to the door and not necessarily be able to step through it himself. You know, the places that I think Crowley was most genius are the things that he ventured very little into exploring. At least from my understanding of him. Now, I'm talking about him as a person more so than his actual writings, because, again, like I said, I'm not overly educated on it. I do have an extensive library of these books, but does a lot of it make any sense to me? No, not really. Not when I try to construct the overall or overarching concepts of it and then contrast them against my own perception of reality, I find things kind of, you know, fall from there. But, I mean, obviously this isn't what we're really trying
well,
to get
yeah.
to anyways.
But that's okay. And then speaking of which, Crowley and Gurdjieff were rivals. They came from two very different schools of thought. So that's another thing to consider, seeing as how you're a fourth way guy.
Yeah, I do enjoy the fourth way. I mean, it's certainly not the end-all philosophy. I myself find big holes in it when it's presented in, from Ouspensky on down. I find major holes. The only time it's ever seemed to make complete sense is in the written materials that I've read from Gurdjieff himself. And in that, the spectrum in which he chooses to paint the picture is a very, very broad and very elusive brushstroke, if that makes sense. It's not so detailed. It's meant to kind of mentally work through and figure out for yourself. And I guess in that, you're really not dealing with a whole lot in terms of distance.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, but what exactly is this Black Brothers thing? I'd really be interested if someone you know, could inform me, because to me it sounds like he's just kind of creating a categorical partition, and nothing more than that. It's just, hey, if you choose to take this path, there's nothing wrong with this. It's just, you know, this is the step you forego to get here. I mean, at least so far as everything that you've presented at this point, you know, my indication is that, you know, if you didn't destroy your ego, entirely, then you're a black brother. I mean, there was no distinction made in terms of, whether it was false ego or ego in the sense or the total sense of the word. But I have to assume that, you know, striving for any type of enlightenment, you have to destroy, you know, false perceptions. So, I'm not really sure.
There is something else that I would like to bring up regarding this topic. I found this very interesting. Is that, as you know, the late Kenneth Grant was a member of the AA, of the, of Aleister Crowley's order, and he worked with Crowley, and then he and Crowley drifted ways because Crowley labeled him as a black brother, especially after Kenneth Grant came up with, you know, his concepts of like a night side system of the tree and that sort of thing. But what I find interesting is that within the Thelemic world, I mean, they realize that, you know, one of the good attributes of Thelema is that they realize that people have to go their own way. And if you're a black brother, you're a black brother. They're accepting of that. They're more accepting. But what I found interesting is that in a way, it is still kind of demonizing, in a sense. It still kind of holds that right-hand path, like, oh, you're one of them. You know, you're not one of us, type of deals. And, after Kenneth Grant was labeled a black brother, he formed his own order and explored the Setchian Typhonian current, or the Nightside tree.
Right, so in a sense, this is more of an external labeling that's done, and not an internal labeling. Is that what you're proposing here?
I think it's a bit of both. Actually, it's definitely a bit of both, because on the one hand, you know, you have to, when it comes to not annihilating the ego, obviously that's internal, but when it comes to the infighting within orders, which is bound to happen, or within other members, then it becomes external.
Right on. Well, I mean, I'm just, any kind of internal labeling that you do, it serves, I think, a constructive purpose to a fault anyways. Like you can say, for instance, I'm a non-smoker, and that's great. It's only when you're then put in a situation where you need to challenge that category that it becomes relevant again. But external labels being placed upon you, that's a completely different story. And I don't know what I find interesting. I don't know who called Kenneth Grant a black brother and whatnot, but Crowley himself called Kenneth Grant that?
Yep.
Well, that makes it interesting. I guess I can't have much commentary there, except for maybe, Crowley, who was independently wealthy and could work for 18 months on the Abermelin ritual and, do all of these eccentric little fancy acting and portrayals of magic, you know. He didn't have to deal with the hardcore reality of life in the same sense that we did. You know, he's not struggling for, you know, making sure that loaf of bread hits the table. So
he's had a few times in his lifetime, but it wasn't until the end of his life that really, the reality really set in hard, especially after Thelema was dispersed by Mussolini.
Right on. Well, I mean, the whole point of what I'm getting at is that, when you're at a point where you're comfortable and you don't have to, take any kind of credit or responsibility for yourself, it's fairly easy to say, hey, I destroyed my ego. You know, but the person that has to go out and, you know, bust their ass from 9 to 5 comes to a completely different reality, in that, you know, you have to look out for yourself, because there's so much more dependent upon you than, you know, just the greater good of you, that, you know, like for me, for instance, I have, you know, children, a child to feed. I've got a roof to worry about. I have to, in some senses, keep a healthy ego, or else, you know, I may become apathetic to actually, you know, taking care of my own responsibilities.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
Taking a little pride in what you do, so to speak. But
yeah, and that's,
again,
exactly,
I don't know that I'm staying on this topic well enough.
That's okay. That's okay. I mean, I knew we were going to drift anyways, because it's a rather broad, you know, topic, and there's a lot of places we can go with it. But in the meantime, you do have a child, and you're worried. I mean, you're concerned more with raising that child, and, you know, your family, and what's been, you know, more of the future. So in a sense, you are laying down your ego, you know, for the betterment of that child, for the betterment of that future. So I mean, in a sense, and there's also one other thing that was brought up, is that there's a symbolic representation. Now Crowley uses a lot of symbols when it comes to crossing the abyss, and one of them is when you reach Bina, that's supposedly the realm of Babylon. Well, not Babylon as we know it, like in, you know, here on Earth, but Babylon as the concept within that sphere. And there's a grail concept in which you spill your blood into the cup of Babylon. In other words, you're expending yourself fully and just not leaving a shred of yourself behind. And in a sense, you know, I see that as not only expending your energy, but everything about you as you know it.
All right. Well, let me kind of rewind here real quick, man. And I realize that
Sure.
you don't have a child of your own, so maybe
No.
you're a little limited in understanding, but it's not
True.
The kind of self-sacrifice that you're wanting to label on it when you're, you know, putting everything into your child. At some point in, you know, whatever, vectoring and negating your life and reality, as people normally do, you come to realize that, you know, you're not a perfect being, and that you will never probably reach that state of perfect. But you have the chance through your child to correct some of your own downsides and misunderstandings,
or even the sins of your fathers, things that were placed on you which you thought could have been better.
Right, whatever it is, you know, inherently parents do this. They place those sins on their children, and this is for a couple of reasons: the betterment of them, the child themselves, but also a way of kind of I don't know, running the experiment with different factors again, if that makes sense. You
okay.
know, ultimately, I guess what I'm getting at, though, is that, you know, your child is your chance to continue eternally, so to speak. You know, you can invest all of your own wisdom and everything in them. And by doing that, well, one of the things that you're going to have to teach them is, you know, to have a healthy sense of self. And that's something you can only really teach by demonstrating it to the child.
Okay.
So,
I see. Well, that's part of why you discipline children in the first place, too. When they do something wrong, you have to stand your ground. So there's still that part of ego that says, enough, this is where the line has to be drawn.
Exactly. And I think that's kind of, you know, I mean, not to disagree entirely with you, but I believe that's probably where more parents are coming from than, you know, I give everything to my child, and this is a selfless act. No, it's a very selfish act. You know, the act of procreating all the way around, in my opinion, is an extremely selfish act. It's deeming that your genetics are worthy enough to continue to exist on this planet, you know?
It's interesting you should say that, because in this concept of crossing the abyss, possibly, you know, again, I would love somebody to call in and discuss this, but it could be saying that I don't want any to partake any more of this, you know, of this realm, of this physical reality. And so you expend yourself into the next level.
Okay. Well, in terms of crossing the abyss and all that wonderful stuff, you know, the problem I see, of course, is always the, you know, the material aspects of that. I mean, what you're talking about is nothing more than a psychological ascension or descension, however you want to put it, you know, a psychological crossover. You're still, you know, you're still plugged into the general matrix, if so to speak.
Right. Right, and
yeah, so.
That could possibly be what the Black Brothers are, ones that will not make that final step. And so they're supposedly their magical workings can only go so far.
Right. Well, again, I'm completely ignorant in terms of this whole deal. You know, I've done some reading on the whole Holy Guardian Angel bit and all of that stuff. And to me, it just seems like if you scrape out the bits that are psychodrama worthy,
right?
You know, the rest of it's just pomp. You know, and so. I guess in that, maybe you could label me a Black Brother and we can move along, because you know, I'm not really sure what benefits come from doing anything other than that.
Well, yeah, I mean, but that's the funny thing about the this experiential state is that you can't really, it's one of those things that you can't, you know, label, you can't put down with language, you know, so I've heard. And, you know, there's another aspect of this whole Black Brotherhood that I would like to discuss, too, and that's the aspect in which, you know, in crossing the abyss, it's very similar to, you know, Buddha being tempted by the demons, Jesus being tempted in the desert. You come to, within the Thelemic system, the demon known as Karanzon, a demon of dispersion. And when you're faced with this, you know, in the abyss, it's supposed to throw you off track or within the Thelemic system and not, you know, help destroy your ego completely so you can move to the next level and then expend it further.
Okay, well, I can understand the value of that in terms of psychological context, but I don't know. It just seems like an awful lot of fancy dressing for something that you could say in pretty plain words.
Well, yeah, exactly. There is a lot of that. I mean, Crowley was working. Let's keep in mind that Crowley, even though he did mix Eastern elements within, especially when it came to you know, meditation and, you know, reaching your holy guardian angel and all that stuff, Crowley did weave in some Eastern thought, but it was very much Western based. So, I mean, you still had like the chalice, the sword, and all that, whereas Buddhists or Hindus would just meditate and just visualize. You know, so there was a lot of drama and there was a lot of theatrics involved, shall we say.
Right, okay, I can understand the value of this, but what I'm curious about is what is the enticement of crossing over this abyss? What, you know, what, you know, What's the opposite? Why is it not a good thing to become a Black Brother?
That's just it. That's what I would like to discuss. I mean, the Black Brothers, I think, are could very well be something to benefit from. Well, supposedly the Black Brothers will eventually fade out. They'll die out, and they'll I guess still be a part of this system, still be a part of Samsara, still be in the Matrix, whatever terms you wanna couch it in, but supposedly there are those who didn't quite make it in Crowley's eyes, in Crowley's opinion, within the Thelemic system.
Okay. Real quick, Matt, let me just go ahead and pause. I'm going to throw out our call-in number. It's 347-989-1371. If there happens to be, a thelemic expert or maybe somebody who practices thelema themselves or even somebody that just has a better understanding than I do of this, give us a call. Let's hear what you have to say about it. I don't know. I had a feeling. Go ahead.
How are we doing with the chat room?
Oh, we're doing fine in the chat room. We've got 9-10 people in there, whatever it is. You know, some of my favorites, some people who just want to listen. It is what it is, man. People come out to check out what we have to say. It's just a shame that this, because I couldn't honestly find too terribly much about this on the internet over the past couple of days, but I know that this is something you were very interested in talking about. So,
And maybe after listening to the archives, somebody can come in later, I guess, and make a video, on YouTube or whatever, post it in some forums.
Right. Right on, man. Well, all right, so let me get this right. In your opinion, it's whether or not you choose to step over this great abyss, cross over this great abyss, is whether or not you're a black brother. I mean, that's the deciding factor there.
Well, not just if you choose to cross the abyss, but if you are able to let go of your ego, whether it's the false ego or the actual ego, in exchange, because, there's a difference between knowing what you have to do and then actually doing it.
Right.
Having to make a tough decision all right, well, I'm going to have to sell my car in order to get the money to, and then save up and buy a new one. Oh, but I really like that car. What if I could just work on it a little bit more? What if I just got out the wrench and just worked on it? It's like being able to let go, basically. And that's you can say you're going to do it all day long, but when it finally comes down to it and you say, no, I'm not going to part with it.
All right. We actually have some commentary here in the chat room. Somebody who apparently has a better clue than I do about what this whole deal is. And what he says is that a black brother is one who works for their own interests, using their position and power to dominate the human race for their own purposes. So they will interfere with events and lives for their own purposes. So, and then Dan Dredd makes the, quick statement of saying, so what you're talking about is a Satanist.
Yeah.
And it sounds like the long and short of it right here. I don't see
I find it interesting how this concept, Black Brothers, was around before the term Left Hand Path was. We have Left Hand Path, Right Hand Path, but it's funny how within the thelemic system, it's just kind of, in a sense, one of the first glimpses we have of the left-hand path.
Right on. Right on. All right. Well, honestly, I don't know that there's much in terms of anything I'm interested in and further pursuing. To me, it sounds like an early attempt to categorize what would later be pointed to as a Satanist. And that's what it sounds like to me. It's just an example or an
Crowley
illustration
Well, Crowley does make a distinction in other writings. Like, it's not to be confused with a black magician or, any kind of color magician. It's just kind of like, I'm assuming that the reason why they call it Black Brothers has to do with the abyss itself. So just to clarify that, it doesn't have to do with black, white, red, green, or anything like that. It has to do with the absolute, nothingness.
Right on. So, sounds like some kind of I don't want to say this, some kind of loose vectoring of morality. And simply nothing more than that. You know, the black brother would be somebody who, you know, for all intents and purposes, processes this thing with the me in front of everything else as the first vector. You know, how does this relate to me?
Exactly.
You know?
In fact, it's funny you should mention that because the demon of dispersion, Karanzan, which is meant to test the magician before he gets into the next realm, the quote that he screams throughout the abyss, as Crowley writes, is "I am I," because those in the abyss can't really take form; they're not held down in the nominal world by the quote unquote law, so they can't really take form and take shape. They're constantly shape shifting. So to say me is very fitting. You know, how does this relate to me? How does this relate to I, the ego?
Okay. And do you have a proposed conclusion as to how it relates?
As to how the Karanzan, the demon of dispersion, relates to this, to the Black Brothers?
Yes.
I would say that the Karanzan, the purpose, so to speak, within the abyss and crossing the abyss is to, you know, throw them off the track and to sink them into the abyss, the practicing magician. But the Black Brother could actually, that's the thing. The Black Brother is more holding on to his ego and to his thing. But if Karanzan is meant to destroy that ego, then, you know, obviously it's meant to be a clash to see if, you know, he'll rise or he'll fall. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, I understand it, so to speak. I don't know. Again, it's a lot of fancy terminology for a pretty simple concept.
Yeah, but it really is. I'm trying to relate this in Thelemic Crowleyan terms. It'd be more like man versus demon without proper preparation. You know what I mean? It's like man fighting something that's greater than himself, you know, thinking that his ego can actually take on something that's beyond his control.
Right on. Well, I mean, yeah, okay, I can see that. All right, tell you what, though, man, it's 20 minutes to the end of the show, and I don't really know that I have even anything else to add to this. So unless there's another vector you want to discuss, I say we open it up to just a straight open discussion and, you know, give people the opportunity of whatever. Look for, you know, a quick bit of insight on something or comment on something, you know.
I am absolutely down for that. As, you know, as you and I were coordinating for today's show, I got to be honest with you, man. The creative juices were not flowing last week, and I couldn't come up with any other concepts. So I was like, this is the only one I could come up with, and let's just go with it because I got nothing.
All right. So how's the book going in the meantime? I guess I'll ask you about how your book's doing.
My book is doing well. Again, it's slowly but surely, but I've written a couple pages worth, but those couple pages are packed with information. I'm going to see how I can, like, stretch it out even more. You know what I mean? Not too stretched out, but just, like, evenly spread it. You know what I mean? So, I mean, it's coming along. It's just tedious at this point.
Okay. Sounds fun. I'm assuming that, you know, you're at least making strides because I've seen you less and less present on the internet, so.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I am definitely making strides.
Interesting. All right. So anybody want to call in and suggest something else to talk about? I'm kind of curious to know if, you know, honestly, at this time slot here, is more inconvenient than not, and whatever. It's something that Zach keeps bringing to my attention, and I keep suggesting that the overall listens are what's important here. You know, not so much alive, but...
It is a Saturday morning. People like to sleep in.
Right on. Well, actually, there is somebody now in our chat that might have some insight as to, you know, why this Black Brothers thing is, well, something that we should vector or whatever.
I mean, there's a lot of Satanists and people from the left-hand path that, you know, I mean, a lot of them dig what Crowley had to say. A lot of them don't dig what Crowley has to say. This topic wasn't meant for everybody, that's for sure. You know, but I think it was an interesting concept to explore nonetheless.
Sure, I don't see any misvalue in talking about it for a couple of minutes. I just don't know. Next time I think I'll use a little more common sense in terms of, you know, what I decide we're going to call the topic for the day. You know, we could have talked about this in a completely open discussion format and probably had more people calling in with other things to talk about. Blah, blah, blah. Yeah, whatever. Anyway, I don't really know what the hell else to say here. Let's see, we've got Wicked Puppy out there. We've got Dan Dredd out there. Tim's Hardcore is out there. Nagashiva.
Nagashiva, call in, bitch.
Oh, boy. And,
yes, because...
And then there's like five or six guests listening, and everybody's pretty much, you know, got very little to do with this whole actual conversation.
I know you got something to say about this.
Well, he's actually put some, you know, some stuff in there. He can only do text is what he's saying, so.
Okay.
What he says is dualism. Black Brothers was a key demonization from Crowley of the Jesuits. Grant made a more efficient use of it, as did I. The demon Corazon was into symbolic mix. I'm not sure if that's symbolic or symbolic.
So, or symbiotic? No. Symbolic, probably.
Right. Yeah, so.
Well.
A lot of them. That's it. IMI is the call of the Black Brothers. Yeah, I mean, again, man, a lot of fancy dressing to talk about something that I think is very cursory in terms of thinking. So,
well, Crowley did a lot of that. He dressed up a lot of his, you know, his wording. He used riddles, rhetoric, you know, all sorts of things to throw off the would-be magician, you know, of the day.
Right.
In a way.
In one sense, I can see that as being legitimate or necessary. In another sense, I think it's just trying to be secretive to make yourself look special.
Right,
so.
Right. He did. We know he did a lot of that.
Yeah. You know, the illusionist will always try to trick your mind, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I'm stepping outside to have a cigarette. So I'm curious now. Overall, do you find Aleister Crowley's work more helpful in your own personal philosophy, or more corrosive? Because to me, it seems almost corrosive. And I'll tell you why.
Explain. Yeah.
Yeah. This guy I talked to about a year or two ago. At this point. He had some really interesting insight. He actually had called into the show a couple of times in the very beginning episodes. One of the things that he warned me about when dealing with the Crowley and Thelema and all that stuff is, The fact that it's such a complete system that it gets very easy to trap yourself in these vectors and this set of thinking.
Right. It's very crystallized. Yeah.
Right. That to me is a total turnoff, because anything that's crystallized is choking out the ability for anything new to be breathed into the conversation. It's kind of like somebody sitting there saying the same thing over and over again, and A, nobody gets it, and B, he doesn't understand that nobody gets it, so he's just saying it over and over again.
Right, and I actually do see an element of that in Crowley, which is why I looked into other systems, that's why I look into, more left-hand, because Crowley didn't like going into that aspect of it, left-hand path, and that's where I find Kenneth Grant's work interesting, and then, going from there, fast forward to, Michael W. Ford, and then going to, the Voodoo Gnostic Workbook, looking into these shadow aspects, which is what Crowley did not really look into. But, that's why, I think that he demonized Grant at one point, calling him a black brother. It's because it's like, I'm set in my ways. That's a very right-hand path way of thinking, if you look at it. It's like, this is my way, and this is the way it is, and nothing can grow from it. I definitely understand that, and I agree with you fully on that. Which is why discussion editions are a good idea. To see if anybody else has any other concepts that go outside of that or something that did not figure into a specific system.
Right on. I suppose I could say a bunch about that, but I don't think it's necessary, so to speak on it. I don't know, man. 12 minutes to go, I'm really kind of bored with the topic at this point. Crowley all the way around. I said my piece on him. The guy was really smart and really stupid. And I think that's the case for anybody that's human. So,
right.
Except for those people who forego any kind of smart, which that happens. But it's not normally because they're not capable of it, just because they choose not to. Put any kind of intellectual integrity into anything that they're doing. Still kind of fascinating. I don't know if you got the chance to actually listen to yesterday's show at all, but I think in a way this sort of connects to Warlock Asylum's whole necromancy thing, just in, certain ideas of... using different psychological constructs to explore the consciousness. But beyond that, I can really see you getting stuck. That's
okay.
What I'm always afraid of myself is getting stuck. Whenever I'm looking at something, I've got to kind of vector it from the outside in, which is something maybe we need to touch on sometime in the future. When you're coming up to a problem, there's a right way to approach it and a wrong way to approach it. Even though the right way and the wrong way are subjective, I think that there's still more merit one way than the other.
Well, there's an easy way. If you're ever stuck on something, there's an easy way to get past that. And that's basically what I'm doing right now, is admitting I know some things, I don't know all things, putting it out there and accepting whatever criticism comes my way. In a sense, that could be seen as not completely destroying the ego, but, giving the ego a swift kick in the ass, and then saying, no, you've got it wrong here, getting outside opinions. So, I very much understand where Gurdjieff is coming from on that one, when he talks about imagining.
Right. Right. That's somewhat of a limited understanding, but I can't say that that is inaccurate or captures what Gurdjieff was saying in any stretch. I think more so, the idea was to just understand the influence and its correspondence in terms of effect and personal action. outside of actually working so much to correct the whatever you want to call it, the flaw that you found or you think's present, but to understand why it's there. You know, a lot of times people deal with problems that they can't necessarily just click on and off like a light switch. They've got to work them out, so to speak. And what I mean by this is I'll use myself as a prime example. But as a young man, I had a terrible temper, one that I would say ruled me at times. And, you know, the way that I've combated this is not through demonizing my temper, but rather through understanding why it occurs, when it occurs, and then choosing from there the right time in which to employ it. So, you know, I don't know if this makes any sense to you there, but...
Actually, it makes perfect sense because I've had to deal with the same problem. You know, you saw me recently. I mean, I've got a temper myself. You know, when something pisses me off, I don't stay quiet about it.
Right, and, you know, you're not necessarily wrong in that, but, you know, at one point it might not be a desired effect. And that's
right.
Fine. If you understand how the dynamics of it work, then you're in control of when it happens and when it doesn't. You know, it's kind of like not looking at things in such a dualistic perspective, not going, you know, I lose my temper, this is bad, but rather going, in this particular circumstance, I lost my temper, and I did not get the result that I desired to get, so... You know, the next time that circumstance comes up, you may choose a different path or even go the same route if maybe you think that you didn't test it out entirely.
Well, you know what? I want to talk about the last time that it happened with me, you know, what we saw on YouTube. I want to break down the dynamics of that because on the one hand, you know, I don't regret, you know, blowing up like I did. You know, I let it be known that I was not having it. At the same time, you know, I realized, okay, I'm going to make amends, and something better came out of it. So there are times when, you know, you put your foot down and when you say enough is enough, and there are times when something better can come of it. But, you know, that's one context. You know, look at another context such as family. That's not going to fly so well. You know, so especially like if you blow up at your wife every so often.
Right on, right on, yeah. It happens, you know, and people from time to time display elements of butthurt. Ultimately, as long as you turn it into something that was better for you, then my opinion is no harm, no foul, you know?
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And that's exactly what I was getting at, too, is that, you know, we were talking earlier about the anger and all that stuff being a catalyst for something, you know, for me saying, all right, I'm gonna do this video, make amends, and that was one of the best videos I ever put out. You know, I was actually impressed with some of the stuff that I was able to, you know, put together.
Right, right, and that speaks volumes for human nature, I think. You know, human nature, in my opinion, shows that even at our worst, we're capable of great things. You know, and
exactly.
You know. Really, honestly, the value of those great things is completely subjective to, you know, your own overall personal will, so to speak. So, you know, well, whatever. We got like 4 minutes left in this, man, and I thank you very much for, you know, proposing the topic and sticking it out. And,
no problem. No problem. I mean, you know what? I'm gonna sit down this week. I'm gonna make it a priority to think of some more show topics and see if I can get some more guests on. Because last week, man, I was bone dry, man. I was out of ideas. Besides this
right.
one,
this is the only thing that I can think of, rather than something I really wanted to talk about. We can avoid having this much verbal blubbering on fucking the air, so to speak.
I think we should, though. I think you and I'm going to put this out there on the air. I really think you and I should discuss the, you know, the time. Because, you know, it's 10 o'clock my time. You know, I wake up for the show and everything. But, you know, maybe more later in the afternoon, you know, so people can get up, get going, get their coffee, whatever.
Right. Well, I mean, in some point, I see the value of that. What runs down to for me is this. This is the perfect time slot at this point for me on a Saturday,
okay,
especially as I move into the busier times. However, that doesn't mean that I'm not negotiable in terms of moving the time slot if I saw something to gain. And that's usually how I look at things is, you know, something to gain. You know, what can I get of it? And at this point, I don't see anything that by moving a time slot for me, it seems like the only thing that I could possibly gain is more live listeners. And I don't know, Zach might call in and torture us a little more. Not that, you know, it's torture when Zach calls in, but sometimes he's just in one of his moods, if you know what I'm saying. So,
yeah.
Yeah, but ultimately, you know, if the goal is to up the number of live listeners, which I certainly don't think that it is at this point, I think the archives alone speak for the fact that people
that
like the fact that they can come and get it whenever they want.
But you know what? I've noticed that, you know, Jason King made this observation back when you guys, you know, when you were starting out with Avenger Satanus and everything. It's like, I think, you know, the best shows that we've ever had were people that come in and interact. Yeah, you know, I really definitely think that, you know, you shouldn't short sell that.
Oh, I agree with that. But, I mean, the people who come in and interact, you know, for the most part, their schedules allow for this anyway. I mean, I've got, for example, we've got Nagashiva, he's been on here. Dan Dredd, he's been on here. Wicked Puppy's been on the show, and they're all sitting in the chat room right now. So, I mean, more times than not,
true
this
that.
Is convenient for them.
True that. Yeah, I'm, you know, just things, you know, in the meantime, another thing that I could do more myself is promote this show. Of course, granted that it's posted, but just to bust your balls a bit. You know, just give time to promote the show a little bit more. I could do that on my end.
Right. Well, I mean, I don't necessarily know. I mean, of course, it's a good thing to promote the show, but I don't know that there's any flaw in its promotion at this point, other than, you know, maybe a couple of things aesthetically that we could do to touch it up. I just wanted to address something real quick while we've got about a minute left on the air. Anybody wanting to see what the archive numbers are, the last month that has passed, because what I'm doing is every month I'm posting these numbers. Like when this weekend's over, I'll go change out the image that's on there. But if you go to the Satanic International Network website and you click on the link that says the Ooze, you can actually scroll down to see what the actual physical numbers are. It's not something that I'm trying to hide. It's something I actually want to make present, because when I'm, you know, what I'm showing you, talking to you guys about is, you know, the fact that the overall listens are what seem to be important to me, and people realize, are intelligent enough to know that they can come back and archive this, and hopefully they're smart enough to know that if they have something to say on the topic, that they can send off an email to us, and we'll reply in kind. And with all that being said, man, this show went right off the air, so...
All right.
So have a good one, and we'll talk to you next week, man.
All right. Later, guys.
Later.